Palatability for dog and cat is a science that normally I tell 1 plus 1 sometimes is 2, sometimes is 3 or more. What means that? For example, if you like pasta and you like ice cream, it means that if you mix pasta with ice cream, you will like that. Maybe not. That's exactly what happened with dogs and cats. Sometimes we are mixing good things that are so palatable to the dog, to the cat, but does not work.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. Corbion's Alga Prime DHA P3, the algae-based omega-3 DHA to boost brain cognition, immune system, and well-being. Adding it to pet food is easier than ever. Bioregion, your partner in yeast ingredients for palatability, immunity, and nutrition. Complete solutions for every pet diet. Learn about the benefits of working with Schooler. Visit schooler.com/pet. That's schooler.com/pet. Young Generation Oral and Gut Health Solutions with antibodies from egg yolk. IGY Technology. Research-driven. Pet-approved.
Well, welcome to the Pet Food Science Podcast. We have a very interesting podcast today. We're going to talk about pet food palatability. I'm very fortunate to have an expert in the field with us. I'd like you to meet Marcelo, and I'd like Marcelo to just introduce himself and how he got into this area and sort of what he's doing today in that pet food science space.
Excellent. It's a great pleasure to talk with you. My career starts, well, I am a food engineering, right? Then did my food engineering course here in Unicamp in Brazil. I have my MBA with marketing and sales. And I am working in the animal nutritional market since 2002. In the beginning of my career, I have started with Enzymes, a company that produces enzymes in Brazil. And after I moved to another company that is a Danish company that was producing a lot of ingredients to the animal nutritional market and human food too. And after that, I went to work in a company that produced palatants for a long period of my career. And that's my main experience, palatants for dogs and cats, palatability for dogs and cats. And right now I am a consultant in the market, in the animal nutritional market. Right now I am a consultant in 3 different companies in the pet food market, always looking for palatability, right? And then that's my experience, that's my knowledge, and that's why I'm here.
Well, I'm very glad we're here today. Thank you. I think a lot of people, they just don't have an idea about the science behind palatability. And I wonder if you could, you've been in this, what, over 20 years? There's been a long experience of change over time, and I'm sure the science has advanced. But tell us a little bit about how one would go about, you know, palatability testing maybe back when you started and how it's happening today.
Now, that's a really good question. The answer is so complex.
Yes.
Just to tell you, palatability is a science. Palatability for dog and cat is a science that normally I tell 1 plus 1 sometimes is 2, sometimes is 3 or more. What means that? For example, if you like pasta and you like ice cream, it means that if you mix pasta with ice cream, you will like that. Maybe not. That's exactly what happened with dogs and cats. Sometimes we are mixing good things that are so palatable to the dog, to the cat, but does not work.
Yes.
We are in a moment right now, and if we look at the history of palatability in the last 20 years, we can see that the industry is working more and more and more to become the food more palatable to the dog and cat. And right now, they are doing that because the first thing that the pet owner is looking for is if my dog or my cat eat or not the food. that's some kind of thing that's the first topic that is you cannot negotiate that in the pet food industry. And the amount of investment that all the companies are using in this segment is amazing. Just to provide some idea about that, to execute palatability tests for dogs and cats, exist a protocol for that. Then a protocol where you can offer the food A, food B, the dog or cat will choose. And the protocol for dog is a different than a protocol for cat. And you can offer the food A, food B, you can look the preference, you can apply the statistic numbers related with that, just to see if the number about the preference is trustable.
ICC Animal Nutrition, a Brazilian company with 30 years of history and present in more than 70 different countries, providing natural, sustainable, and technological solutions for animal nutrition, health, and well-being in a safe and scientific way, adding value in food production and helping to feed the world.
So you're saying you have two cups or two bowls in front of the pets? And so you have a food in one bowl, call it food A, a food in another bowl, you've got food B. And then you simply measure how much is consumed from each one?
Exactly.
But how do you know, I mean, if a pet's hungry, don't they eat all of one and then go eat some of the other? Or how do you do that?
Good question. Normally what we do is we offer the energy necessary for the dog in one bowl for one day, and the same energy in the bowl B. And what happens is you are offering the double of the energy that the dog will eat. Of course that if you let all the food there during all the time, the dog will eat everything, right?
They're dogs.
Exactly.
They overeat pretty much all the time, right? Not all dogs, but lots of dogs, yes.
Then what we do is we offer the bowls in the same time. And during a period of time that sometimes is 30 minutes, 40 minutes, the dog will eat the food. And after we will remove the bowls. And one thing that we are looking for is the first choice, then the first bowl that the nose of the dog will appoint, and how much was the intake ratio, right?
So you have both first time they eat it, and then how much they consume. And then do you care if they sample both? Or if they go and just eat all of one, is that something you would track?
What happened with dogs is they trust in the nose.
They solve a lot of problems with their nose, don't they?
Yes, and exists a reason for that. The amount of olfactory cells that the dog has is unbelievable. Then just to give you one idea, the human people, we have between 5 to 20 million olfactory cells. Dogs, we are talking about 70 to 220 million olfactory cells. Then is a lot. Then they really trust in the nose.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? What's different than a cat, right? Cat is, I normally tell to the people, hey, be careful with a cat, because cat is not a small dog. It's a completely different science.
Yeah, I found that out through my career. I have observed that too.
You cannot think that the things that will work with a dog will work with a cat. Then the taste for cat is different. Then if you look the protocol for cat, in case of the dog, you will put the food, and during 40 minutes, 1 hour, you need to remove the food. In case of the cat, you will put the bowl A, bowl B, and let the food during the day. 20 hours.
Yes. 20 hours, yeah.
Then you can let the food there. The cat will eat part of the A, part of the B, and will eat more of the food that he like or she like, right?
Do you find those different, in this test, those different palatability drivers, very different between the dog and cat, you said. So is it because of the nose, or do they just really taste things in a different way?
They are different, but in case of the dog, the olfactory cells, they are the driver, right? In case of the cast, I can tell you that olfactory cells is important, but taste is more important.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yes, and the taste for cast is completely different than a taste for dog. Then cat cannot taste sweet. The sweet taste, cat cannot feel that.
You know, you kind of think of a cat eating protein, right? And dog maybe eating like everything. They're omnivores, of course. So I thought maybe cats kind of like specific amino acids, perhaps different than other amino acids. Like we might even say some of those amino acids had a sweetish proline, you know, comes to mind, have kind of a sweet-like taste to us. And cats, they seem to like that, or so it's an amino acid kind of selection?
Yes, we have something that we need to look for cat that is really important. Sour, bitter, salt, sweetener, acidity, umami. Then we are looking for all these tastes for cat. But when we look for some taste acidity, some taste umami, it is so important for cat. Then in case of that, for example, umami, it is some kind of taste that ingredients like yeast and other amino acids can help a lot.
Yeah, when I taste some of the palantirs, I know not everyone eats them, but perhaps some of our people watching this will go, whoa, but they're good, right? But the dog ones, they sort of taste like liver. I don't know. The cat ones, I don't know. They have they have some kind of aftertaste that I don't really like at all. I think I could never choose a cat pal by what I thought was tasty for me. Some of them, maybe, yes, the yeasty ones taste okay, but others, just no.
And that's some kind of thing that's interesting because dog, for example, they like something sweet.
Yeah.
If you offer something sweet for a cat, will not work.
Just don't go there.
Yes, then acid tastes, salts, and umami, that's some kind of thing that works a lot with cat.
Yeah, fascinating.
And one thing that is really interesting with cat is they have a taste memory, a food memory.
Oh,
it is like us, right? Then, if they are eating something, and I don't know, during some day you offer some kind of food that's not so good for the cat, then the cat feel bad with that. The cat will not eat more this kind of food.
Fascinating. Now, is that imprinted for a long time? I mean, could that be memory from when you were like even a kitten?
It is for a long time and more. If you have, for example, some kibble that the cat is eating that and for some reason can cause some problem during the ingestion of that, the cat will not eat more.
No. So this is a real problem with cats if they're sick, right? So if you have a palatant and a cat's going through this experience of maybe they have, I don't know, some illness that causes that response, they associate that maybe with the food then. Is that real too?
It is real. And one example that I would like to tell you is, if, for example, I pick up a cat panel in Brazil, a cat panel in the United States, a cat panel in Japan, and I execute the same PAL test in three different cat panels, maybe the result could be different because the history of the cats are different.
Well, the Japanese cats want fish, right? What are we thinking? Of course, I should have thought of that.
That's the reason why we should consider the markets that we are looking for.
Now, one of the things, I think I stopped you. We were talking about this change over time of the pet food measurements. Is pretty much everyone today still using that two-pan test, or are there other tests that people use to evaluate PAL?
One test that is some kind of test that complement the two bowls. These two bowls, we normally call two bowls choice. That's the name that we give to this test. That's a preference test. Another test that is very common in the market is the consumption test. In the consumption test, we will offer just one bowl during, for example, 1 week or 5 days. the ball A, food A, 5 days, 1 week for different dogs. And after next week or next 5 days, we change for the ball B, over the ball B, in the ball B. Always in each ball, we have the energy necessary for the dog during 1 day.
Of course.
And the idea will be over that during 1 week, change again, change again, change again. Then if you change 3-4 times that, you can see in the end of the evaluation how much of food A and how much of food B the dog was eating during this change. This is a consumption test. We are not asking to the dog, hey, what do you prefer? We are just changing to see if the consumption, if the new food or if the food A or B are acceptable to the dog.
Yes.
Without a huge difference.
Yeah, I understand that. So in that test, I would say you're saying, is it acceptable? Not necessarily, is it better than, right? It's just, is it okay?
Yeah, and in the consumption test, it is exactly what happened in the pet owner house. Because if they are offering the food A and the person is going to the market, does not find the food A, they buy the food B and offer the food B, what happened?
Right.
Then we try to execute that in the PAL test too.
I like that idea, is trying to bring it back to the consumer. Can you talk to us about that a little bit? Because in some ways this seems kind of scientific. You know, you got a well-established test with well-established statistics and a trained panel. Does it relate anything to what the consumer finds when they come home?
We apply a lot of science in the PAL test, looking to the dog, looking to the cat. But who is buying the dog food and the cat food is not the cat, is not the dog. Is the pet owner, right?
Okay.
Then that's some kind of thing that the pet owner, they are looking for some ingredients, for some raw material, for some marketing that we have in the label that normally is very close to the human food consumption. And we need to keep in mind that dog and cat, they have a different physiology of the human. But what happened is the pet food industry explore a lot the humanization of the dog food and cat food, and they are trying to bring the dog and cat for some human concepts related with food. Then, for example, I was looking in a dog food here in Brazil. If you look the picture of the dog food, you can see a pumpkin, a chicken, and okay, it is for the pet owner, right?
Yes.
Our science, when we are talking about palatability, is 100% focus in dog and cat. What we try to do is the ideas or sometimes the crazy ideas about the humanization of the dog food and cat food. What we try to do is bring that to something that is acceptable to the dog and cat.
You know, I understand that, you know, especially perhaps cats, they really do have in their central tendency of nutritional requirements, they're different than people. And what we want as a person, we bring a lot of cultural backgrounds, we bring a lot of personal backgrounds, and from a pet food science perspective, and I think PAL fits there just as well, you're centered on the dog and cat that actually doesn't have that cultural connection at all. So you bring it along.
Just to comment with you, right now, some customers came to me, hey, Marcelo, I would like to launch vegetarian cat food.
I have made them before. They that's very difficult, actually.
Guys, this is a carnivory, a strict carnivory animal. 500 of a history of a carnivory animal, and we are trying to launch a vegetarian cat food, and that's related with human human concepts, right?
And you can do it. You have to add a lot to that cat food, you know, things like carnitine and arachidonic acid and things that come normally in meat, you have to add. But what do you have to do? I mean, so say, for example, you can, and it's difficult, but I believe you can get a nutritionally satisfactory vegetarian cat food. But does that change the palate? I think cats like meat, right?
No, exactly. It is some kind of thing that if you study a lot, you can make happen. Yes, you can make happen, but does not make sense.
Does not make sense. Okay, well, we'll leave that for the marketing people. We'll have to push that through, not the scientists.
One thing that's very funny is the marketing people in the pet food area is so creative, right? Because we have many
yes
claims in the label, in the packagings. Every year we have different claims. It is a market that is growing a lot. And one thing that's interesting is, considering that cat and dog, they are part of the family, right now, people is expanding more and more with cat and dog.
And they want that pet to have the best food that they can provide. And that's, palatability is the outward sign of that, isn't it? That if a cat doesn't like it, it may be nutritionally wonderful, but if they don't like it, they're going to say, I'm not buying that food.
Exactly.
I want to get back to testing a little bit because, you know, I've played with, like, for example, if you have a low fat food for a pet trying to lose weight and you think, okay, I'm nutritionally shifting that food, do you use a different palatant and maybe even a different test, or does the same test work in those ways?
Yes, when we are talking about, for example, neutered cat, right? Then neutered cat is some kind of food that, well, palatability is low because you have a low amount of fat. You should control fat because normally neutered cat has a tendency to be more, to gain weight, right?
Yeah, they put on weight, right? That's a shift.
Then you should apply a different palatant. You should use other ingredients that will increase the palatability in this cat food.
Okay.
Right. Then you can manage that to become the cat food or dog food more palatable, even if you reduce fat.
So that's kind of like you're adding a different taste. What about covering the taste? Do you have times when for some reason, maybe a medical reason, or again, back to those cultural reasons, I want this ingredient and the pet doesn't like it. And so you kind of have to mask that, or does that change either the palatability or the testing when you're doing that?
One time, I was in a customer in Brazil and the customer told Marcelo, I have a palatability problem in my puppy, the small dog food, because I need to use the milk flavor in the puppy's food, because the owner of the cat and the owner of the dog, they would like to smell milk.
Yes, I understand.
But the milk flavor is causing a palatability problem. How to cover that?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. It's one example. Other example is greenies or other. When we look some snacks and treats and the companies, they would like to use some flavors like mint flavors or peppermint flavors just to change the smell. In the dog.
And appeal to the person, right? That feels good to the person.
It is not so easy to cover this kind of smell, or this kind of flavor to the dog and cat. Then it is common that we receive some needs, customer needs, specific needs, like I told, and we need to mask that. We need to cover this kind of smell or taste that is negative in the palatability. What happens normally is, okay, if I have something that's so negative, I need to increase what is so good just to create a balance, right?
Yeah. a sort of question that kind of gets on the downside of palatability, if you will. I've wondered if we have done so well because foods, I believe they've changed over those 20 years you've been in this. The foods taste better than they used to. They're just more attractive to the pet.
Yes, yes.
Does that cause a problem for the pet? We have obesity is a real problem for pets. Do you think PAL owns any of that, or is it just sedentary pets and people wanting to overfeed treats? And there's lots of reasons for this, right? And I look in a mirror and I'm not as svelte as I used to be. So lots of reasons. But what do you think about as it relates to palatability?
Yes, that's a really nice question. When we think about what is true is the pet food is more and more palatable. If we look at the history of the last 15 years. And the industry is still looking for more palatability, right?
Yeah.
In my opinion, that's my personal opinion, I think that we should be careful about palatability because more and more palatability, it is some kind of thing that we can create some behavior in the dog and cat where the dog and cat will eat a lot, right? Will become more fat. And we are forgetting the nutritional aspects, the health of the animal, right? But sometimes what the industry executes is the same thing that happened in the food industry. We bring things that are so good, the taste is fantastic. But in parallel, we create things that the taste is not so fantastic, but nutritionally is good. And in the future, what I think is, and when I am talking about the future, I think that we are not so far from that. We are arriving in a moment of the palatability curve that will be stable. We're not possible to jump more and more, right?
Does the test change as you try and hit that curve? Is there a way, like I've played with, I have to do a certain amount of work to get food, and it's a harder test, but, you know, we have this activity, say, you know, cats will learn to pat a pad to get food, and dogs will play lots of tricks to get food. And depending on the food, that answer is different. And that fascinated me than the two-pan test, which probably most closely reflects what the consumer will have when they come home. But I wonder if maybe you shift testing as you move up on that PAL curve. What do you think?
The knowledge that we have right now, what's happening is the people are understanding more and more about the kibble matrix. Kibble matrix means the palatants, the kibble, and the process. And raw materials, then they are looking the impact of raw materials, process, and palatants, and how impact each of the things together. Then it is some kind of thing that's interesting because if you pick up the same raw material, you change the process a little bit, the product is another one. But palatability is a science that always you should execute a modification. And test, modification and test. And this background, this information that you are creating, this database that you have right now is a platform that guarantee any movement in the future, right?
I think that's a great concept. And it's absolutely foundational, isn't it? That if you start out with something that is low quality, maybe even just from a PAL low quality, it doesn't matter what your palatability is that you're enhancing with it. It's still not going to taste good.
You cannot make a good product or a palatable product with raw materials that does not work well, right? Then if the palatant is good and the process is good, but your chicken meal is not so good, forget.
I wanted to talk to you about something you mentioned I thought was quite fascinating. I think we forget it. You know, I'm a nutritionist, so I always sort of think, well, what are the ingredients and what are the nutrients that are provided by the ingredients? And I have to admit, you know, my blank spot, the place I need help with is this processing. And so like how that food is made. I know cats, they like a more friable, what's the right term? They like a different mouthfeel perhaps than a dog does. How does that relate to what we're talking about here with palatability?
When we are talking about the perception of a dog or a cat, if we are talking about a dry cat food, for example, and a dry dog food, for example, normally the cat food should appear a moisture a little bit lower than a dog food.
Okay.
And sometimes we hope a moisture in the case of the cat food between 5 to 7%, and in case of the dog food between 8 to 10%. Then in case of the dog water, more water is more palatability when we are talking about dry dog and dry cat food. When we are talking about wet food, the conversation is different. When about the kibble pH, kibble pH is really important. Then we are talking about in case of dog, when we look for a pH around 6.2, 6.4, that's okay. In case of cat, the pH is a little bit lower, and this will impact in palatability. Then in case of the cat, we are talking about 5.6, 5.4, sometimes 5.2. Then pH will impact in palatability. Then when we talk about texture will impact a lot in case of cat food. Then how much hardness, how much crunchiness is the kibble will impact a lot in case of cat palatability, right?
You can imagine a cook and they could make a really good cake with the same ingredients, and then someone, you know, maybe myself, not very skilled, and yeah, the cake taste doesn't taste the same. And so what you're telling me is a lot of that is true in the processing of pet food.
We are talking about taste. We are talking about texture. We are talking about some off flavors are important.
Yes.
If you have some peroxidized value in your product, we'll destroy the product. If you have some bitter flavor in the product, will not be good for the palatability, right?
Let's talk a little bit about yeast. We're using yeast in a way, and I think people don't understand. I think yeast are fantastic. Those scientists can do, you know, marvelous things. They make them dance, if you will. Tell us about how yeast might be worked into a palatability program, if you would.
I agree with you. Yeast is a fantastic ingredient. More and more, the industry is using yeast in case of the dog and cat. If we look to the cat, well, first dog, right? If you look to the dog palatability, yeast, we improve a lot dog palatability. Not only the inactive yeast, but if we look to the hydrolyzed yeast, autolyzed yeast, yeast extract, improve a lot the dog palatability. And in case of cat, what I can tell you that yeast is more important, is even more important for cats.
Interesting.
Because you cannot produce a really good palatant for cat without yeast, right? You should yeast to produce the cat food palatant. And yeast is a palatability driver for cat food. If you use yeast, the palatability of the cat food change a lot, improve a lot, right? And I am not only talking about the native yeast, but the new technologies to produce the autolyzed yeast, to produce the hydrolyzed yeast, to produce the yeast extract is moving the industry to new flavors, new approaches, new palatability levels. When we are talking about yeast, and yeast has something that is really nice. It is a natural ingredient, right? And it is an ingredient that we are talking about palatability, but we are talking about health too, right? And because yeast will impact in the animal microbiota, it's really, really good, right?
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. ICC Animal Nutrition, adding value to nutrition. Trow Nutrition, the science of ingredients, nutrition, and blending. Kemin NutriSurance is your pet food and rendering partner every step of the way. Trusted ingredients, proven performance. Wilbur Ellis Nutrition. We partner with a purpose.
Well, let's talk about that a second. It fascinates me. You know, I used to think of the microbes as not too important. I wanted to know what was coming through the gut. And what happened within the gut was, not so interesting. And we couldn't measure it, right? We couldn't measure the microbes. They died in culture. We didn't have the capacity to measure all of these metabolites that they're using to interact with and communicate with the host, too. There's host-microbe interaction. How does that influence palatability, and how does yeast influence that, do you think?
Right now, we have many research with dog, not so much with cat. But many researches with dog where we are evaluating the dog behavior and the connection with the food.
Yes. Right?
Then the level of stress of a dog connected with the dog food. Then, because this happened with human food too, the connection between gut and brain exists, right? What you eat sometimes will create some modulation and your humor will change, right? The same thing happened with a dog. If a dog is more aggressive, you can try to modulate that using some kind of food. We have many research related with that. I think that we are starting in the pet food market with this kind of research, but we are working, and right now the tools that we have to evaluate that, we have tools to evaluate the symbiose, the dysbiose in the gut of the dog, the gut of the cat, then we have tools that can help us a lot in case of that.
Yeah, I think that's what's driven it, hasn't it? The development of those tools. You know, at one time it was no one can do it, and then only governments could afford to do it. And now realistically, pet food science is there where we can evaluate that. It's pretty exciting.
And for example, right now we are looking to, I am working to execute a test here in Brazil, in a university here, where we can evaluate the microbiota of dogs, offering some diet and trying to check the impact of this diet and in dogs that had parvovirus.
No, I understand. Yeah, serious disease. So I understand.
Then I can see many, many, many research around the world related with microbiota, and yeast is some kind of thing that help a lot. When we are talking about the yeast wall works, right?
So many of those. And the sort of interesting thing to me is, of course, the oligosaccharides that are in that wall are being moved through the small intestine and available for the microbiota in the lower gut. And you're saying that really can influence not only the health of the pet, but the palatability of the food, and that sort of crosstalk that goes on. That's really fascinating.
Yes, and exists a relation between if the dog and cat, they eat the food and they are feeling well, they eat again, right?
That's
some kind of thing that more study is necessary, but it's happening.
Well, do you see anything else on the horizon? I mean, the whole microbiota understanding and, like you said, the tools to evaluate that, they're really top of mind. Do you see anything else changing that might be in the technology area that will influence the palatability area?
We are starting the discussion between microbiota, behavior, and palatability, right? We have many, many, many work that still is necessary to do. But we already have some results that we know that in case of cat, if you offer some kind of food where the palatability is good and the cat is eating that and the cat feel well, the cat will continue eating that, right? And if you execute, and that's funny, if you execute a movie in case of the cat to check the cat behavior after eat or during the process that the cat is eating the food, the behavior tells a lot, right?
That's fascinating.
How the cat is smelling, how the cat is eating after eat, then we can connect that, right? Of course, that this is some kind of work that take time and technology, but the technology right now is available.
Well, Marcelo, I've enjoyed this talk. I think we've learned a lot about palatability and pet food science. I wonder if you just look at the future, you know, what would you look for, you know, the next, you know, maybe it's what we've talked about, but the next steps. And I always like to ask people, and maybe you would say, what kind of individual would you like, what would you like to see in that individual to be working with in the future?
Looking what the industry is doing right now, well, pet food industry is growing more and more. Every year grow a lot. Then what we can see is what will happen in the pet food industry is the industry will start to use more the dog food and cat food with some nutraceuticals components that could help in the animal health. Then if we look to the animal history, the dog and cat in the past, the projection of a dog life or how many years we live, nobody was waiting that the dog will live 18 years, 20 years right now. But what happened is when you are living 18 years, 20 years, new kinds of disease or needs will appear. Then that's a new segment that the industry will explore. Then the dog, the senior dog food, the senior cat food is some kind of thing that will be explored more and more.
Well, that's fascinating. Well, again, thank you for the time. I've enjoyed this talk. I think we could be very happy with the interactions and the information we've had today. So,
I really would like to thank you too. It was a great pleasure.
I think we should watch this and think about maybe another talk and a deeper dive. But good for today.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with Elite Remote Talent without the time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.